You're listening to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today, we enter the Grey Lodge once again to discuss Twin Peaks, Season 2, Episode 7, Lonely Souls, a.k.a. Episode 15, I think. If you take the chronological order from the pilot, I don't know. You know the deal. The numbering convention is unconventional. Now, this is going to be one of the best episodes of Twin Peaks. Things really ramp up here, all right? And this episode was directed by David Lynch, written by Mark Frost. The killer combo. You don't get them all the time in the world of Twin Peaks until you get to Season 3. The only other episodes in Season 2 that have the Lynch-Frost combo are going to be the first and the finale. So it's a big deal, right? And for good purpose, because there's going to be a lot of things that unfold today. Well, without further ado, let's just get into it, right? Starts out with the, you know, one of the opening scenes is, I don't know why I think it's so funny, but it's funny to me. FBI Director Gordon Cole, David Lynch, of course. He's headed out. He's going to Bend, Oregon. And he's saying goodbye to the line of people at the sheriff's department there. Everyone's lined up with coffee and a donut. And he goes down the line shaking hands. The only problem is Philip, a.k.a. the one-armer, as Gordon Cole calls him, the one-armer. Philip, he's got a cup of coffee in his only hand. And Gordon Cole, he sort of... He's going down the line shaking hands, and then he just stops. And he sort of nods at him, and he tells Cooper, hey, take care of Philip. Take care of Mike. You know, Philip slash Mike. Because, as you already know, Philip has this alternate personality of Mike, this spirit that takes over. So then we see an experiment. They go to the Great Northern Hotel, and they have Philip, the one armor, as Mike, kind of confusing, and he's sitting there while the deputies bring various guests to him to see if he has a reaction to the guest. And Ben Horn comes, because the idea is that Mike, the spirit inhabiting Philip, can detect where Bob is. Who's Bob? So Ben Horn, he comes storming down the hallway, smoking his stogie, puffing like a train, like a conductor on a train. Storming down the hall, and when Ben Horn shows up in the room, Philip has a reaction. Mike, whatever. Meanwhile, Hawk, he's investigating Harold Smith's place and finds it completely wrecked. Harold Smith is hanging. He's dead. He committed suicide, and the police investigate the scene, and sure enough, as I believe it was Donna and James told the sheriffs, that they would find Laura Palmer's secret diary, because they already found Laura Palmer's regular diary in her room in the pilot, right? Now they find her secret diary. Then we head over to the Palmer residence, and Maddie, you know, Laura's cousin, basically Laura with a wig, she breaks the news to Leland and Sarah that, like, hey, I gotta head back to Missoula, Montana. And a lot of weird conflicting feelings come up here, because in a way, Maddie's presence, you could argue, makes Sarah and Leland feel better, because she looks exactly like Laura, and she's her cousin. So she's blood relative. I want to play the clip for you. It might seem kind of unimportant, but take a listen to some of the things being said here.
And all I'm saying is, see what a wonderful world it would be if only we'd give it a chance.
Morning.
Love, baby, love.
Good morning, dear.
Good morning.
That's the secret. Yeah. If lots more of us loved each other, we'd solve lots more problems. And then this world would be a guesser. That's why old Pops keeps saying, I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them.
Uncle Leland. And Sarah.
And I think to myself,
I'm going to get some coffee.
What a wonderful world.
Did you sleep well?
Very well. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
I see skies of blue.
I've been thinking. I've really enjoyed my stay and everything. But I really feel like it's time for me to go home. To Missoula. I've got my job, my apartment, and I just miss having a life of my own. So, I think I'll probably be driving back home tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Well, we are going to miss you very much. But we also understand completely.
You do?
We do.
We do. Yes, we do.
You have been such a wonderful help.
Yes, but now she has to think about herself, honey.
Mm-hmm.
She's got her own life. Besides, you'll come back and visit, won't you?
Oh, of course. I'll come galloping back often.
It's not like Missoula was at the far end of the universe.
No, hardly.
Well, good then. It's all right. Just know that we love you very much.
I love you too.
Now you'll notice it was filmed in a very strange way. It's almost like it's from the point of view of someone sneaking around the room watching. And the camera begins its sequence behind the record player. The record playing is What a Wonderful World, which reminds me of the movie 12 Monkeys. Which makes me wonder if the guy who made 12 Monkeys saw Twin Peaks first, right? Because I was in the late 90s. But the camera zooms around. Let me back up. The camera starts on some artwork of Missoula, Montana. Then it zooms around the room and stops at the record player. And the whole time you hear the record playing. Now you're gonna hear you already heard Maddie talking about how if she ever, you know, if the Palmers want her back out there, she'll come galloping home again. Now that'll make possibly more sense later. And Leland says, "Oh, it's not like Missoula is on the other side of the universe," which is kind of a weird thing to say. Now I don't want to go into it too deep, but my argument is that the world of Twin Peaks is playing out a cosmological battle. So for him to say Missoula isn't on the other side of the universe, I don't know. It just stands out as kind of odd to me. So meanwhile, Cooper and the deputies, they're at Harold Smith's place, and they find Laura Palmer's secret diary, and they realize that some of the pages are torn out. This is very important to the plot line, as you will find it unfold throughout the whole series. So it's kind of important to know. They also find a sort of suicide note Harold wrote out, and it's a French term, and it means "I'm a lonely soul," which is the name of the episode, Lonely Souls. Meanwhile, Shelley and Bobby are fighting over their lack of funds because they were going to take care of Leo, and Bobby had this great idea that if they took care of Leo, the state would pay them $5,000 a month, and they'll be rich. But turns out that's not the case. They're not making any money off this thing. And Bobby is shaking down Shelley because he's like, "Look, I know Leo's got more money hiding somewhere." And you know, and it's weird because Bobby's implying that Leo is into all kinds of things and has money stashed somewhere. And of course, you know, Bobby, he knows more than he's letting on to Shelley. And you find out a lot more about it in Fire Walk With Me, but I believe back on the pilot, you saw him making a drug deal with Leo. And you find out about this sort of ring of drug abuse and selling drugs at Twin Peaks and how Bobby and Leo were both, you know, coordinating things. In fact, when Shelley realizes that they don't have enough money, Bobby gives her the, you know, we don't have any money. There's no we kind of talk. Like, he's a real scumbag, right? He's leaving her high and dry now. And while they're talking, Leo, who is still in his vegetative state, he starts saying new shoes over and over, and he's spitting oatmeal out. Then, over at the Great Northern, Audrey, she confronts her father, Ben, about how she finally breaks down to him, like, hey, I know everything about One-Eyed Jack's. Because, you know, she was working there for a minute. She knows how Ben owns the place, his involvement, that Laura worked there. And she even asked Ben if he slept with Laura Palmer, who, reminder, she was only 17. And Ben is, I don't even know, 40. And Ben admits to it. And then even in this very soapy way, furthermore, he says he loved her. And he even's got he's got a framed photo of Laura Palmer on his desk. No one thought that was weird, I guess. Painfully obvious. You know, everyone loved Laura in Twin Peaks. She was the connective glue for everyone. And by the end of this episode, we'll see more of that fallout. We go back to the Double R Diner. Shelley's breaking the news to Norma that she's got to leave because she's got to take care of Leo full time now because of stupid Bobby. Norma and Big Ed show up. Nadine and Big Ed show up, and Nadine is still confused about her age. She doesn't even recognize Shelley. She still has her abnormal strength. She smashes a ice cream sundae glass. Then Bobby goes to get these. So Bobby figures out that Leo's got some boots at the, some boots he ordered or something from a shoemaker. And he shows up to Shelley's place with Mike, a.k.a. Snake. Remember Snake? I swear this is his second appearance since the pilot. He just shows up. And they break open the boots, and inside, sure enough, there's a little mini cassette. What's on the cassette? Well, we don't know yet. Bobby says, it's not money, but who knows? Meaning he's going to find a way to make money off this cassette. Back at the sheriff's department, Cooper's piecing together this secret diary of Laura Palmer. And in it, he reveals that there's references to her dad's friend, Bob, who is molesting her. And she also tells about how she was going to expose Ben Horn to the world. Then Audrey walks in, tells him that she knows that Ben owns One-Eyed Jack's and that Ben was having sex with Laura. Now Cooper's cued in. Cooper then recollects that Mike Phillip, a.k.a. One Armor, needed his medications, and when Ben walked into the room at the Great Northern early at the beginning of the episode, he freaked out. And Cooper's like, oh, without chemicals, he points, because the giant told him that this was a clue. Take a listen.
Diane, it's 2:47 p.m. I'm in the conference room at the sheriff's station with the remains of Laura Palmer's secret diary. A great deal of it has been mutilated. Much of what I've been able to decipher supports the contention of the one-armed man. There are repeated references to a Bob. He was a threatening presence in her life from early adolescence. There are intimations of abuse and molestation on a regular basis. He is referred to on more than one occasion as a friend of her father's. And I just uncovered this entry dated less than 2 weeks before her death. Someday I'm going to tell the world about Ben Horn. I'm going to tell them who Ben Horn really is. Yes.
Audrey.
I had to see you. I'm sorry if I'm interrupting you.
How are you feeling?
I spoke with my father.
Yeah?
He was sleeping with her. With Laura. I don't know for how long, maybe quite a while.
Holy smokes.
She was up at One-Eyed Jack's working there. And he owns the place. That's what I found out.
He told you this?
Yes. What are you gonna do? What are you going to do? Are you going to arrest him?
Audrey, I don't want you to say a word about this to anyone.
Okay.
Okay, go on. What's going on? Without chemicals, he points. This morning at the Great Northern, Mike reached for his arm and fainted. Just when a certain person walked into the room. Harry, we need a warrant. A warrant for the arrest of Benjamin Horn.
So Cooper knows that this diary is very important and that Laura is going to expose Ben Horn. Or Laura was going to expose Ben Horn. So now Ben's suspect number one. So that's why they're going to arrest his ass. They should set him up with, what was that dude? Chris Hansen. They should get him a Chris Hansen set up for some Mike's Hard Lemonade and whipped cream. But this scene is very critical in the storyline, right? This whole episode is very instrumental. And you can almost tell sometimes when you're watching the show, if you know everything going on, because most of the show wasn't directed by Lynch and Frost. It was various directors and writers and such. They're all great, don't get me wrong. But you could tell that some of them fit more into the canon of the interesting parts of Twin Peaks, and some of them are more of slapsticky, soap opera-y kind of stuff. Now, it's also interesting when you watch it, because Audrey, when she walks away, because Cooper's talking to her, and then in comes Sheriff Truman, and Audrey's got to leave, and she stops, and twice she kind of looks at him. And you can tell she's still romantically interested in Cooper. And it's almost like this severs the tie. Like, this was her last sort of attempt, is what it feels like. So they go to arrest Ben Horn, and of course he resists. He's resisting arrest, and he goes, "I'm going out for a sandwich," and he tries to escape. Which was interesting, because it reminds me of the sandwiches. Remember, he was making love to the sandwich? Him and Jerry were raving about the cheese sandwiches he brought back from France or whatever on the baguettes. So anyways, they manage to arrest him, but Ben, he threatens them. He says, "I have friends in very high places." That's because Ben Horn, running the One-Eyed Jack's whorehouse, is of course very Epstein-like, right? Doesn't that make sense? Then we go back to the Palmer house, to the living room. We hear the foreboding music. And Sarah Palmer, she's creeping down the stairs. And she's saying Leland's name. While the record player is slowly spinning. And so is the fan. Everything's spinning. The circular nature is happening. It is happening again. Yes. The circular nature of things is being shown throughout the whole episode. You had the donuts at the beginning. You got the record player spinning. You got the fan spinning. I mean, something is about to repeat itself. Then we go to the police station again. Log lady's in there. She tells Cooper that there are owls in the roadhouse. The roadhouse is the bar, the double R, not the double R, the bang bang bar or whatever. Cooper says, "Something is happening, isn't it, Margaret?" And she says, "Yes." Then we cut to the full moon, right? It's the symbolism of the goddess. Something is happening with the goddess energies of Twin Peaks. And we know the last time this happened wasn't good. Laura Palmer got killed. Meanwhile, Pete Martell's up getting a little bit of milk and cookies to go to sleep. And Mr. Tojimura shows up. What the hell is this? Well, it turns out Mr. Tojimura is actually Catherine Martell, Pete's wife, who everyone thinks died in the fire. Surprise. He spills the milk and cookies. Then we go back to the Palmer residence to see what's going on there. Something bad's happening. Sarah's crawling into the living room now. And she sees a vision of a white horse on the carpet in the living room as the record continues to spin. Now remember back at the beginning of the episode, Maddie said she would come galloping back. Two references to the horse, and of course the horse represents the pale horse, the apocalyptic pale horse. Sarah's having some kind of apocalyptic vision here. And what's weird is they show Leland in the living room there. He's completely unaffected. His wife's like crawling around on the ground, seeing horses. He's adjusting his tie in the mirror. And the implication seems to me that he's been abusing her. We're not sure, though. Meanwhile, we get one of the greatest scenes in Twin Peaks starts to unfold. This is, I mean, when you rank all the Twin Peaks scenes, the last, you know, 10, 15 minutes of this episode is up there. It's up there. James and Donna meet up at the Roadhouse. And, you know, James, he just broke up. I don't know. This guy's dating everyone. He just sort of broke it off with Maddie because Maddie's like, I'm heading out. So they meet up at the Roadhouse. Julie Cruz is on stage performing. And James and James knows that Harold is now dead because Donna and Harold were sort of having a thing, but Donna was trying to use him to get to Laura's diary. And then James came in and saved her. Remember that? James is kind of happy that Harold's dead. And they're sort of rekindling at this point. And it's a wonderful little scene. Donna quietly sings the Julie Cruz song that's being performed on stage. She wants James to be rocking back inside her heart. These two are a mess. All right, they're a mess. But can you blame them? They're his girlfriend and her best friend died. Young, tragic. And this is where things go 0 to 100 real quick. All right. I would play the clip here, but there's not a ton of dialogue. It'd be a lot of ethereal noises and screaming. But Cooper he's almost taken to a different realm as Julie Cruz is on stage. She's singing, the song changes. Now she's singing As the World Spins. And Cooper looks around the Roadhouse and everyone sort of freezes. Next thing you know, the tall man is on stage. And the spotlights are showing on the tall man and Cooper. And the tall man warns Cooper. He says, "It is happening again." Then we go back to the Palmers. And we see Leland looking in the mirror, adjusting his tie. And guess what's looking back? It ain't Leland. It's Bob. That's right. The Bob that earlier we heard in Laura's secret diary was Leland's friend who was molesting her. And the whole scene, it cuts back, but this whole next scene, like Leland and Bob are interchangeably shown like it's the same person. Like Bob is taking over Leland's body. And he's putting rubber gloves on. And Maddie comes downstairs screaming about how something smells like it's burning. She smells burning smells. And then she screams in terror because Aunt Sarah is on the ground and this Leland Bob thing is coming after her and now he's choking her. They do a lot of, Lynch does a lot of slow motion capture and Maddie's screaming, "Somebody help me," which is terrifying. And Bob's chasing her around the living room. And then Leland Bob delivers these heavy blows to her dome. I'm watching, like, was this on ABC? On, you know, next to Family Matters or whatever? It's pretty wild. And then Leland Bob, he's kind of delusional. He starts dancing with Maddie, who's all bloodied up and half unconscious at this point. And he's calling out for Laura. Then he's fully Bob again, and he starts kissing on her. And then he slams her head into the wall and kills her. He smashes her face into that framed artwork of a stag or whatever in that Missoula, Montana that we saw earlier in the episode that the camera focused in on in the room. And he talks like he's Bob, like someone else. He goes, "Leland says you're going back to Missoula, Montana." And he delivers the final blow and kills her. And it's shocking. And then Leland shoves a little tiny letter O under her fingernail. And then it flashes back to the bar and the tall man staring at Cooper. And then the room goes back to normal. And now here's where it gets really interesting, because before the murder, they made sure they showed Cooper scanning the room and everyone was laughing and carrying on and having a great time at a bar. Then the room freezes. We see the murder. Then everything resumes back and Julie Cruz is back up on stage. The tall man's gone. And Cooper scans the room and some of the people in the bar, most of the people, except for James's dumbass, they're very sad. It's like they know Maddie's been murdered. They feel the loss. That's why I said there's something going on with Laura being connected to everyone. Not even just literally she's connected to everybody in Twin Peaks because she's had relationships with everybody. But her cousin Maddie, remember, Laura and Sarah have this sort of telepathic link, and so does Maddie. They're all connected. There's something special about this bloodline. And even the room service guy, that old room service guy at the beginning of season 2, episode 1, who was taking forever to to leave the room, Cooper was shot. He comes up to Cooper and tells him he's sorry. How do they all know this? But yeah, they show Donna and Bobby, and they're damn near crying, and Cooper even. They all feel remorse as if something has already happened, like they already know. And then Cooper's mind drifts to the red curtains, and the credits roll. Great ending. Why do these characters know about the murder? How do they know it happened? Are they all empathically connected with each other, or Laura, or both? But the point is, there's something special about Laura, Maddie, and Sarah, and this bloodline. You know, Laura's special. She's the one. And then fun fact, David Lynch was born in Missoula, Montana, so maybe that's where I don't know where that came from. So there you go, season 2, episode 7, a banger, as they say. And let me tell you, season 2, episode 8 is also very legendary, so be sure to watch that, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about it. As always, stay woke.